in consultation with team leads and their development manager, relying on their judgments as well as records from past projects. Another step is to work with the program managers to determine the actual feature set for the new product based on available time, personnel resources, and market demands. The development manager then consults with developers and program managers to assign specific features to individual developers and feature teams. Building features consists of coding and reviewing code with other developers as well as with program managers. Microsoft literature cautions developers to look out for problems such as taking up too much memory or writing code that is dependent on particular hardware processors. Developers also receive instructions on zero-defect programming, the sync and stabilize process that relies on daily product builds, milestone stabilizations, and daily testing, as well as debugging. See chapters 4 and 5. Testing code is the responsibility of developers and testers who work together in pairs. Developers test their own features, running automated tests on their code very frequently, usually every day. Developers also provide what Microsoft calls private releases of their features to their tester buddies before checking in their work to the official build. Private releases give testers a chance to find bugs and developers a chance to fix them prior to disseminating the code to other members of the project and other internal users. In addition, developers put their code through the usability lab to get additional feedback from ordinary customers on their features as they develop them. The final task of the developer is to prepare the product for shipping. This requires the discipline to refrain from making any more major changes to the code, such as by adding features. Developers must also get the bug count as close to zero as possible and keep it there for a set period of time. Testing code frequently with testers and the usability lab, as well as with beta versions at customer sites, is a critical part of the developer's job. This is because developers have a tendency to stray from customer concerns with the usefulness of features, as well as with the size and speed of a program. Microsoft products have not usually been well received on these dimensions, particularly in their first versions. Senior Vice President Brad Silverberg, a computer science graduate from Brown University with a master's degree from the University of Toronto, had been a beta tester of Windows 3.0 while working at Borland. He joined Microsoft in 1990 to head the Windows MS-DOS group. Silverberg noted that one of his missions in Microsoft as the executive responsible for the Windows 95 project has been to get his developers to think more about customers. "I've been very active in trying to create this connection between the end user and the developer so that you get into his mind what the end user's needs are. With the next version of Windows, the next major milestone is the size and performance milestone. The next 3 months are just going to be spent on taking what we have and making it smaller and faster. I don't think that performance and size are something that you can just add at the end and say, 'Okay, we've added all the functions, let's tune it.' I think you need to, at every point, not get too far from what your end goal is, because you can't take an elephant and put it on a diet and get a mouse." Testing. Software companies from the mainframe and mini-computer industries rely on developers to test their own code, but also have separate groups of specially trained people who perform final tests on completed software products. In many PC software companies, however, testing has remained an ad hoc activity. It is primarily up to developers to test their own products, sometimes with help from outside contractors. Microsoft used to treat testing in this manner. Since the late 1980s, however, and after 1991 in particular, Dave Moore and other managers have actively tried to make software testing into an accepted professional discipline within the company, separate from but comparable to development. They have not succeeded completely. Developers still walk taller. But Microsoft's training literature points out three reasons now accepted in the company why testing should exist as a separate discipline. 1. Developers do not produce perfect code, and program managers do not produce perfect specifications. 2. It is necessary to have someone detached from the spec and the code provide an unbiased perspective on their quality. And 3. It is much less expensive and easier for developers, as well as much better for product reliability and customer satisfaction, to find and fix bugs as early as possible in the development process, when pieces of code are less intertwined. To be most effective, Microsoft literature recommends that testers examine products from 6 perspectives. User perspective. Replicate how ordinary customers will use a feature and determine if the feature should make sense to them. International perspective. Make sure that formats and languages are correct for different languages and national areas. Hardware. Evaluate if the product is compatible with different hardware platforms and equipment configurations, such as Compaq versus IBM versus Gateway machines, as well as Apple, or with particular printers and other peripherals. Software. Evaluate if the product is compatible with other software. For example, Word should be able to read and convert WordPerfect files, as well as provide special help to WordPerfect users by feature. Systems products like Windows and NT must also work with non-Microsoft applications. Specification compliance. Check if the product complies with the original product concept and specifications as envisioned by program management. Product stability. Check for product stability on 2 levels. 1 consists of measurable metrics, the bug find rate versus bug severity, and other measures that we will discuss later. The second is qualitative, defined as the gut feel for are we ready to ship the product. Microsoft began hiring testers, officially called software test engineers, in 1984, when the company first set up separate testing groups. The few testers prior to this time reported to development management and did not have their own functional structure or track levels. Not until 1986 did Microsoft set up a position as director of testing for applications and hire someone to fill it. But Dave Moore later took over the job in a part-time role, adding to his title as director of development. Microsoft did not appoint a full-time director of testing until Roger Sherman took on this job in 1993. As we pointed out in Chapter 1, the functional directors do not in practice supervise managers of development, testing, and the other functions. They primarily identify good practices for their specialties, promote these in the company, and perform occasional audits of the product units. We discuss their role further in Chapter 6. Most of Microsoft's testers, and nearly all the developers, are located at the Redmond, Washington headquarters. There are also 2 small foreign testing sites. Ireland handles Microsoft products written in specific European languages, and Japan, called the Far East in Microsoft documents, handles Japanese, Korean, and Chinese versions. Overall, Microsoft has approximately 1 tester for every developer. This means there are about 1,850 testers in the company, out of a total development staff of about 4,100 people, including program managers and product planners. In contrast, Japanese and U.S. producers of large-scale software systems usually put no more than 10 to 15% of their project staff in testing, and usually far less. Microsoft's numbers are comparable, however, to Lotus. Microsoft could probably reduce these numbers if program managers and developers spent more time doing architectural planning and detailed design work before developers started writing features, or by making developers review more of their own designs and code. Such steps, however, would reduce the amount of flexibility that Microsoft projects currently have to let their features or components evolve incrementally. A large number of testers is also a type of insurance. They are relatively inexpensive compared to the cost of recalling and replacing products because of major bugs. Microsoft thus assigns testers to work side by side with developers and in parallel feature teams from the early stages of a project. At the same time, testers report to test leads, who manage a group of testers working on part of a product. The test leads report to the test manager of the product unit, and the test manager reports to the manager of the product business unit, not to the manager of development. Preparing for a new testing effort requires several activities. One is a general review of the previous project's post-mortem report, as well as reports from other testing groups. These reports provide ideas on what types of problems to look for and how to find them. Microsoft managers also encourage testers to talk with product support personnel and customers, and to review media evaluations to determine what industry critics like and dislike. After this preliminary work, testers start devising special tools or code routines to help them test. Another activity is research, studying competitors' products as well as new features to see what Microsoft should be doing. The next step is to develop a testing strategy by identifying high-risk areas, including dependencies on other groups, that might delay an on-time simultaneous shipment of the U.S. and foreign versions of the product. Microsoft's training materials use Excel as a case study for how to conduct good testing preparations, including using test plans or scripts, lists of commands or functions to exercise in the testing process, for each feature. Other testers and managers can review them for completeness. Testers also develop automated test suites for themselves and developers. These sets of tests are faster and more complete than manual tests, and they eliminate the tedium of running the same series of commands or functions over and over. Finally, testers spend time doing what Microsoft groups variously call unstructured testing, scenario testing, ad hoc testing, guerrilla testing, and freeform Fridays. Here, they go beyond the planned test scripts and use products in different ways in order to cause features to fail, if possible. Testers have a major responsibility to test the private releases of the developers. Their efforts here provide quick feedback on bugs during the development process, both in terms of errors or problems in the design from a user's perspective, as well as coding lapses or mistakes. According to Gene Sheldon, test manager for Word, about 80% of Microsoft's in-process errors simply consist of missing lines of code. Testers report bugs found in the private releases to the developers by email. Only after this process of private release testing is complete do testers issue a public test release to other people. Testers also track bugs found in the test release and characterize them by feature area and severity. Meanwhile, developers create a testing release document, TRD, which identifies features that are done and ready to test. It also points out particular areas of concern or details of the code to help the testers focus their efforts. Other specialties. Microsoft has three more well-defined functions that also overlap with the other specialties. Product managers are marketing specialists. Some work in product planning as part of the product units, although since late 1993, Microsoft has centralized most of them in division marketing groups. Customer support engineers provide technical assistance to users and analyze customer feedback. They work in the Product Support Services, PSS, division, which reports to Steve Ballmer. User education staff prepare manuals and help documentation. They work in the product units as part of the product teams. Product planners in the product units work intimately with program managers to define new ideas for products or product features and to write up the marketing specification, that is, the vision statement. In addition to outlining features, this document covers issues such as product packaging, pricing, and positioning in the marketplace relative to other products, and it requires an analysis of competitors and market trends. Product managers in the division marketing departments also do some of this analysis. Apart from these activities, product managers identify new product areas, provide some ideas for new products and features, and eventually prepare for the marketing and sale of new products by a separate sales force. Microsoft training literature, which described product managers as MBAs and snappy dressers who own their own homes, listed five key areas of responsibility. Oversee a business. Recognize and pursue market opportunities. Aggressively represent the customer in the product development process. Take responsibility for the trade-off between functionality and ship date. Take responsibility for the marketing and sales process. Customer support engineers answer customer questions, primarily on telephones, but also via the mail and electronic means. They conduct extensive analyses of data on Microsoft customers and competitors. They also provide invaluable input to the product development and testing groups by highlighting problems to look for and helping the product groups set priorities. By answering customer questions, the PSS division provides assistance that most customers now consider an essential part of the product they are buying. Worldwide, Microsoft receives at least 20,000 phone calls per day, in addition to hundreds of thousands of daily electronic inquiries, such as on an automated fast tip service. For dealing with customers, Microsoft literature described the key responsibilities of the customer support engineers. Handle customer calls by questioning customers to understand the problem and identify solutions. Research the problem and share all possible solutions with the customer. Code the call for the support database. Submit a bug report or documentation error report if the problem is not a user error. Summarize the problem in an article for the knowledge base tool if it is a user error. PSS prepares a widely read weekly report called Offline Plus, which details problem reports and helps set the agenda for testing, bug fixing, and next version product development. In addition, people from this specialty work closely with program managers, developers, and testers, as well as the usability lab and user education staff. They provide input from the perspective of user support on new products and features while they are being developed. See Chapter 6 for a fuller discussion of the role of PSS. In addition to writing up manuals and other documentation, user education groups work with marketing to provide input on product packaging and labeling, as well as product internationalization. They have followed the lead of the other specialties and formalized many of their procedures, and even characterized their processes in terms borrowed from software development. They refer to their product development cycle and build, as well as quality assurance procedures that include testing the documentation as it is developed and fixing bugs in the materials. User education groups also hire a variety of specialists, such as professional writers, graphic designers, technical editors, copy editors, documentation assistants, indexers, and a production team that manages the printing process. Principle: let functional experts define and hire for their technical specialties. In the 1980s, Microsoft created functional specialties, such as program management and testing, that did not have traditions of their own within the company and did not map directly to university curriculums. Accordingly, it seemed logical to managers to allow the initial members of these and other technical specialties, such as software development, customer support, and user education, to define their job characteristics, as well as take charge of hiring thousands of new people. Microsoft has continued this practice ever since. The recruiting and screening process. The average age in Microsoft is about 30, although most people are considerably younger, especially programmers in the applications groups. Half of all employees come directly from college, and most Microsoft managers seem to prefer it this way. They especially want young people they can more easily socialize into the Microsoft way. Microsoft has tried to retain a personal approach in hiring, as in the early days of the company, when Bill Gates, Paul Allen, Charles Simonyi, or another very senior technical person would interview every candidate. Microsoft recruits program managers, software developers, test engineers, product managers, customer support engineers, and user education staff in a similar manner, following the practices established initially for hiring developers. Microsoft sends out recruiters to 40 or 50 U.S. universities every year. They go to the best schools, but also look carefully at local colleges and universities, particularly for customer support engineers and testers, as well as at schools in foreign countries. Recruiters from a centralized human resources department organize the visits, handle paperwork, and participate in initial interviews run by experienced employees from the technical functions and product groups. Promising candidates then come back to Microsoft headquarters for additional interviews. Recruiters, therefore, do not hire, they manage the hiring process, which reached huge proportions during the late 1980s and early 1990s. Dave Thompson, a development manager in the Windows NT group, described their role and Microsoft's approach to hiring developers. In the campus case, there's an extra level of interview because somebody goes out and does a pre-screening. After that, the process is basically the same for full-time experienced and non-experienced, with finer points of variation. They'll talk to probably 4 to 6 interviewers during the day, and then the end of the day is the person who makes the hiring decision, the as appropriate, as they're called here. The interview process is very dynamic. The recruiters are one of the key elements of the process. They help manage the process. They make it as painless and effortless for development managers as possible. In a small company, I used to invest tons of time in hiring people. The only time I invest now is the time that only I could apply, the evaluation of feedback, the interviewing of the candidate, and making a decision. When you try to grow fast, you've got to have an efficient process to interview people. The good recruiters have an uncanny sense for some of the important characteristics. They know what kind of person is more likely to make a good Microsoft person. Any company that has HR people do the hiring is doomed. The Microsoft headquarters interviews are entirely with people from the functional areas in the product groups. Developers do all the interviews for developers, testers all the interviews for testers, and so on. The discussions aim at determining how smart a person is in an abstract sense. Not simply how much people know about coding or testing or a particular specialty like marketing. Gates has been quoted as looking for 4 essential qualities in new hires: ambition, IQ, technical expertise, and business judgment, with IQ most important. Famous general questions from Microsoft interviews include being asked to estimate the volume of water flowing down the Mississippi River and the number of gas stations in the United States. The answer does not matter as much as the approach a person takes to analyze the problem. Relatively few recruits make it through the screenings. Of the developers interviewed at their universities, Microsoft typically asks only 10 to 15% back for additional interviews, and then hires only 10 to 15% of the final group. In total, Microsoft hires between 2 and 3% of the people it interviews. Rick Rashid, Microsoft's Vice President for Research, lauded the screening process. It's a lot like going through oral exams. The interview process here is pretty stringent. I'm not sure that it screens for any given personality type, but it certainly screens for raw skill and talent, and ability to think on your feet. Once hired, a new person encounters a continual series of confrontations and challenges. These may come from Gates himself at the annual newcomers party, or even in one of Microsoft's cavernous corridors. Each of the company's roughly 2 dozen multi-story buildings has X-form wings and various angles to maximize the number of individual offices with windows and views of the picturesque landscaping and nearby mountains and forests. As a result, only smart people can successfully find their way through the hallways. And only people willing to work long hours, 14-hour days, and working weekends are common, survive. Furthermore, like the Japanese, Microsoft people take short vacations, if at all. Dave Moore described a typical day. The Microsoft way: wake up, go to work, do some work. Oh, I'm hungry. Go down and eat some breakfast. Do some work. Oh, I'm hungry. Eat some lunch. Work until you drop. Drive home. Sleep. To test the resolve of employees further, Microsoft pays relatively low salaries. Gates used to balk at paying high wages and even refused, initially, to compensate secretaries and other people for overtime. He eventually settled on a policy of no overtime compensation, but started giving annual bonuses, and then stock options, beginning in 1982. Total compensation in the 1990s has been generous because Microsoft's stock price continues to rise. Compensation now includes a biannual bonus of up to 15%, stock options, and payroll deductions for stock purchases. An employee can exercise 25% of the stock options after working for Microsoft for only 18 months, and another 12.5% every 6 months thereafter, anytime within 10 years, with new options granted every 2 years. Employees can also put up to 10% of their salaries into stock purchases at 85% of market value. Burnout and turnover. There is, of course, a negative side to how Microsoft manages people. One result of the rigorous schedule is burnout. People work such long hours for such a long time, and often on one particular product, that they grow weary and leave. Richard Barth attributed some of this to Microsoft's conscious policy to hire about half the number of people we think we need. That cultivates this ownership process. It minimizes bureaucracy. On the other hand, we tend to select people who would burn themselves out anyway. We hire type A people because they like working their asses off. Dave Moritz, the former MS-DOS Windows test manager, complained about the paucity of managers skilled enough to keep people from overworking and peaking too early on a project. Burnout particularly affects developers, who often grossly underestimate how long it takes to build their code. It also affects testers, who have to work with developers in pairs and often spend whole nights testing their code. Moritz himself was a burnout victim and retired soon after shipping MS-DOS 6.0 in 1993. For example, with the testing of making the compression data for DOS 6.0, it was all done at night. We'd tell people to leave the offices at 5, and we'd go in and make an image of their disks, back up their files, and then run the compressor. When they came in the morning, a developer in the Windows group, or in the WinWord, Word for Windows group, or Excel group, would have his disks compressed. Or they had actually been debugged, and the image dumped back if we couldn't do it. All at night. It was constant night activity, and every weekend. If you do that too soon, people don't want to work here. What I'm saying is, you never get laid back at Microsoft. You always have this tension. Am I doing enough, and have I done everything? And it's stressful. I know that I'm not going to die at Microsoft. Another year or 2 years, and I'm out of here. I don't want to see software again in my life. I've had it with this place. I will sit in a canoe, fish, and catch salmon for the rest of my life. Dave Moore estimated that as many as 10% of new hires leave each year, and that this rate continues during an employee's first 5 years in the company. After 5 years of experience, however, he claims that almost no one leaves permanently. Some people take leaves of absence to rest and do other things for a year or so. Doug Klunder, for example, once picked lettuce in California. Moore further asserts that this turnover rate has held steady since the late 1980s, and that turnover in development groups is only about 3% annually. He maintains that most of the turnover company-wide comes from product support, as well as from manufacturing, where the work is very routine and they hire a lot of high school kids to stuff boxes 24 hours a day. Microsoft does encourage people to leave if they do not perform up to standards. Various sources reported that the company in 1993 and 1994 let go the bottom 5% of its workforce, based on managers' perceptions of who was productive and who was not. Moore insisted, however, that these broad cuts did not apply to developers. The type of people who emerge from this rigorous process of recruiting, screening, and burnout are talented, ambitious, and willing to work long hours for long-term financial benefits. They are, in short, very much like Bill Gates and other senior people who helped found the company. As Jim Connor, a program manager for Office, observed, "That's one of the things I respect about Microsoft. They're outstanding at hiring workaholics. I think a lot of that has to do with our interview process. And they're really, really good at motivating people. My own perception, speaking to some degree about myself, I suppose, is that we're really good at finding people who are trying to hit that final home run. And man, they give you a lot of at-bats here. So they're very happy to load you up to death. And people accept that challenge. So one person is not enough, but somehow the work almost always does get done. You get weird cases where people literally move into their offices. I used to have problems when I was a test manager. I would have to order people to go home because they were exhausted. They'd work for 3 or 4 days straight. They were just compulsive about it. And I think that's how Microsoft makes the strategy work. Program managers. Program managers have the broadest and most ill-defined set of responsibilities. They have to work most closely with people from other functional specialties, particularly development and product management. There is no particular university degree that qualifies someone for a program manager's job. Consequently, what to look for in new hires has always been frustrating, as Gates himself observed. Program management is weird, because where do you recruit program managers? What's the background for a program manager? Experienced program managers know what not to look for. They do not seek people with coding or marketing backgrounds. Rather, they prefer people with an interest in how companies design products in general and software in particular. There is some overlapping with the pool of people who become product managers, and Microsoft actively encourages talented people who do not work out as program managers to try their hand at product management. But product management is a relatively easy specialty to recruit for, as Mike Conti commented. It is harder to find program manager candidates. There's very little official background that you can have for designing today's commercial applications, whereas there's an awful lot that you can learn in school about marketing these applications. John Fine described the qualities he looked for. Hiring the right kind of person is absolutely essential, and the magic of the right kind of person for a program manager is two things. One is someone who is completely passionate about producing their software baby. They just have to be one of those people who feels ownership painfully. You've got to have that because when all else fails, someone who spends every waking moment worrying about everything about a product is always going to produce a better product than someone who feels they can let go of responsibility. The second thing you need is someone who can view the process of creating a product from start to finish kind of like a chessboard. They always know to walk around the problem from every side they can think of and make other people help them walk around the problem from other sides, rather than focusing on their 10 favorite dimensions of the problem and not even thinking that there are other dimensions. Microsoft has struggled to find program managers, but looks mainly to universities, which supply about 80% of the new recruits. According to Christine Wittress, product manager for systems line marketing, another source is transfers from other Microsoft specializations, such as product management, testing, and development. Most new program managers have technical undergraduate degrees, and some have master's degrees. A few have studied liberal arts in college, and occasionally there is an MBA, although this degree is far more common among product managers. The only program managers we observed with formal training related to their jobs worked in visual standardization of user interfaces for groups such as Office, Research, and the Consumer Division. They often have degrees in psychology or industrial design, backgrounds important for exploring new types of interfaces that are simpler to use. Whatever their formal education, all program manager candidates have to demonstrate an ability to understand basic technical issues, even if they are not skilled programmers. Conti estimated that in the applications area, about half of all program managers could do a decent job writing an application in Visual Basic. It's generally not as much a measure of technical aptitude whether someone is a developer or a program manager. There are program managers who have all the aptitude necessary to be a developer, but it's a preference of what problems they like to solve. In the systems area, program managers are clearly more technical, because they help design features that often consist of application programming interfaces that developers use when writing code. Program managers thus tend to have backgrounds that combine a strong interest in design issues with some knowledge of or familiarity with computer programming. John Fine, for example, was an anthropology major at Reed College in Portland, Oregon. He had taken many computer science courses in college and got a job as a programmer in a small company building development tools for the C language. He joined Microsoft in 1986 as a program manager for programming tools. Then he became a program manager for Quick Basic and eventually for the highly successful Visual Basic product. He also served a term as director of program management. This involved organizing and giving talks, training new program managers, helping out where needed, and thinking about which group to join next. Mike Conti combined an understanding of the technology with an interest in business and followed a career path similar to Jabe Blumenthal. He had a bachelor's degree in information systems and management from the Stern School of Business at New York University. He worked for a small applications company and then as a freelance consultant before joining Microsoft in 1989. Conti began in the Excel marketing group, servicing large corporate accounts. As an extension of this job, he created a position within the marketing group for new product planning, doing high-level design work for new versions of Excel. After 2 years, he switched his title to program manager. He also became one of the team leads on Excel 4.0 and then a senior program manager for Excel 5.0, before joining the new Office Group in 1993. Another senior program manager, Jim Connor from the Office Group, has had more academic leanings. He obtained a PhD in psychology from the University of California at San Diego, where he studied learning behavior and neurobiology. He spent time as a postdoctoral fellow at Berkeley and the University of Michigan. He left a research career at the University of Washington to start his own software consulting and development company in 1983. Connor joined Microsoft in 1989, first as a contract tester and then as a test manager for network systems products. Then he became a program manager in the Interoperability Design Group, working on interface standardization as well as the definition of common features in Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and other applications. This group became part of the Office product unit in 1993. See Chapter 6. Developers. It is much clearer to Microsoft people what kind of skills they want in a developer and how to identify those skills. Developers look for people who are expert programmers in C, a highly portable language, and conversant with the lower-level assembler language, which is useful to make programs run more quickly and use less memory. They also want people who can demonstrate general logical capabilities and work accurately under pressure. At Microsoft, developers seem to believe that someone who performs well in a hiring interview is more likely to write solid code under a tight deadline with millions of users waiting for the product, whose defects will surely get publicized in the computer press and may go on to national or international infamy. They want people who are not simply interested in programming for the sake of programming, but who seek personal challenges and enjoy shipping products into the marketplace, making money for themselves and the company. Microsoft managers also prefer to hire computer science graduates directly from college and then get them involved in Microsoft projects as quickly as possible. Because developers play such an important role in this company, writing the lines of code that are Microsoft products, their recruiting process is particularly rigorous. It has consumed onerous amounts of time during the major hiring years. According to Mike Maples, during the late 1980s and early 1990s, Microsoft developers spent about 15% of their time recruiting other developers. Management now tries to limit individual developers to no more than 2 one-hour interviews per week. Overall, the average candidate sees one developer in the university campus interview, at least 3 developers for interviews at Microsoft, and then has lunch with another developer or two. Thus, a minimum of 4 to 5 developers see each finalist candidate. If a group is still undecided, it invites the candidate back for more interviews. If more than one group shows an interest, the candidate may return for yet another full day with the other group. Microsoft also requires each interviewer to prepare a written evaluation of the candidates. Since many people, including senior managers, read these reports, the interviewers usually feel a strong peer pressure to do a thorough interview and write a detailed commentary on each new candidate. Dave Thompson discussed this as he explained how the NT Group recruited developers. Developers are the only people qualified to interview developers. We structure the interviews where at least one major component of the interviews is coding questions. The interview process is pretty well structured. Everybody supplies feedback to everybody, so there's a lot of efficient exchange of information. The fact that your feedback is read by everybody kind of sets the style and the quality of the feedback, which drives the quality of the interview. If you get to the end of the interview and you write a piece of feedback that doesn't say anything, doesn't have any data in it, you're embarrassed, right? And embarrassment drives the world, right? So you make sure you do a good interview the next time. Testers. Microsoft has had trouble finding software test engineers. It is clear that testers of applications need to understand how average people use software products. In contrast, testers of systems products need to understand how developers use features and how applications programs and peripherals, such as printers, interact with the operating system. Testers of both types of software also have to like to break things. They have to want software products to fail, not work. The opposite job of program managers and developers. This is not necessarily a common set of skills and predilections. Dave Moore stated it simply. It's been tough for us to find people who want to be career testers. The dilemma begins with the fact that Microsoft will not hire people who really want to do programming and think they can start in testing to get in the door. It is complicated by the fact that a knowledge of programming is useful and even essential for some testing, such as for operating systems and languages. Mark Olson, test manager for Excel, has precisely the type of background and mentality Microsoft managers look for in testers. A native of Tacoma, Washington, who was born in 1965, Olson grew up with computers and took several courses on programming and other technical subjects as a physics major at the University of Puget Sound. After graduation, he worked at IBM for 7 years in semiconductor materials development. After growing tired of being trapped in a junior research position because he did not have a graduate degree, he returned to the Washington area to look for a new job. Olson described how he came to join Microsoft in 1989. I had an interview at my alma mater for software test engineers. They were interviewing, of all things, bachelors of science majors in physics. At that time, it was difficult to find an entry-level job with that degree. So I jumped at the chance, did some research on what the company was all about and what testing was all about. I learned that you had people whose responsibility it was to break software at the high level and understand how things work and make sure they work correctly. Olson quickly became one of the top applications testers in the company, although he still finds it difficult to specify precisely the qualities that make for a good tester. In the interviewing process, he looks for people who think differently from developers, people who do not take for granted that a feature works, and search for non-obvious contexts in which a feature might fail, such as a multi-feature scenario, testing one feature in combination with another. It's often harder to define what's going to make a good tester during the interview process than for a job where it's very clear-cut if you can code. Being able to test requires not only having the skill or the ability to learn new software and grasp what the idea is without any documentation, but also have an aptitude for it. So we look for people who are eternal skeptics. They don't take anything for granted. Just because the developers say this works, they don't say, "Oh, okay, great." They try it. They push that to the limit. I have to be smarter in a different way than the developer about how the feature should work. You have to be able to understand what a spreadsheet does and how a customer is going to want to use it, and map a million people's use of a spreadsheet onto 6 months of focused testing by one or two people. That's the real challenge of testing, capturing all those scenarios. An undergraduate background in science, such as Olson has, is common among testers. So is his lack of experience in testing software for another company. Microsoft managers prefer to hire testers directly out of college, or at least people with no experience in testing. Inexperienced but smart people are more likely to learn Microsoft's style of testing quickly, as well as be satisfied with Microsoft's low salaries and high job expectations. Some testers did have experience before joining Microsoft. For example, Gene Sheldon, test manager in the Word Group, majored in history and physical science at San Jose State and received a master's degree in the history of science at the University of Wisconsin. She worked in sales for a computer systems company and then spent 5 years in testing and quality assurance for a Microsoft rival, Software Publishing, Inc., which produces Harvard graphics. Sheldon joined Microsoft in 1990 and rose quickly through the ranks. Testers sometimes come from other functional groups within Microsoft. Olson estimated that about 15% of the 50 or so testers in the Excel group during 1993 came from customer support, and they brought a deep appreciation for problems that average users encounter. Moshe Duni, who served as both the test manager and program director for Windows NT 3.0, had earlier been a program manager. Managers do not, however, encourage developers to switch to testing, particularly in the applications division, because programmers often make assumptions about how their code works that good testers should not accept. Olson emphasized this point. We want people who want to be testers. We don't want people who want to be developers. Developers have a very structured approach to writing code, and they make assumptions, and they write code based on those assumptions. We don't want anybody who wants to make assumptions and just live on that as enough. We want people who question the assumptions and come up with things that go beyond that. In contrast, however, many testers in the systems groups have backgrounds similar to the developers. Furthermore, they occasionally move from testing to development and vice versa, though this is rare for truly talented developers. This mixture of people makes sense, since users do not interact very directly with operating systems. Rather, the key users of the features in operating systems are developers writing applications for those systems. It is the same with computer languages and software development tools. Dave Moritz, for example, had college degrees both in ecology from a university in South Africa and computer science from Technion University in Israel. He also worked as a tank commander and as an assembler programmer for airborne control systems in the Israeli military before joining Microsoft in 1987 as the development manager for OS2. Moritz worked as head of the graphics engine team before taking a job as the test manager for MS-DOS Windows. Moshe Duni had development experience, though not with Microsoft. He studied electrical engineering at Technion University in Israel and worked in software development for military applications. He joined Microsoft in 1988 as a program manager for OS2, then became the OS2 test manager. Duni hired some 50 testers before taking over as the test manager for Windows NT, for which he hired more testers. He generally tried to recruit developers as testers, although Duni admitted having a hard time. We had to do some selling because, in many people's minds, software testing didn't fit with what a competent software engineer viewed as a challenging role. But they went through an interview process that was the same interview process and screening criteria that any developer hired into the OS2 project had to go through. Dave Moritz also had difficulties hiring people as testers and convincing them to be satisfied with this career. People get very tired testing. We haven't had a sufficient career path amongst the testers. And also, we've had a very bad way of hiring, in my opinion. Dave Moore and various other guys will say differently, but we go out and we hire what we call STEs, software test engineers, from colleges. These are young guys who've gone out and made a conscious decision in life to take a CS, computer science, degree. They want to write code. We bring the guys in here, and they just run tests. This is the sort of guy that gets pissed off, but that is the only candidate that will pass our acceptance criterion. The acceptance criterion is you come in for an interview and you have to ask the guy a coding question. If I get a guy off the street, an excellent guy that I can put in a lab and work him for 3 months, testing applications and learning connectivity and how Novell works, and ask him to insert an integer in a linked list of C integers, he doesn't know. He's never going to be hired here because he can't pass the hiring questions. To make up for the shortage of testers, as well as to handle periods when testing demands are at a peak, such as when a beta version of a product is just finished, Microsoft continues to hire part-time or contract testers. These people generally are not knowledgeable about programming, and they tend to work long hours for low pay. Some, like Jim Connor, know a lot about programming and become regular employees and managers. Other specialties. Microsoft does not require product managers to have coding experience, although many have backgrounds in engineering, and some have studied computer science. Typically, they are familiar with using computer software in a variety of settings. Increasingly, they have advanced degrees in business, such as an MBA, and some formal knowledge of marketing techniques. Mike Conti, for example, had degrees in management and information systems, as well as experience in sales and consulting, before joining the Excel Group as a product manager. Richard Barth had an undergraduate degree in electrical engineering from the U.S. Naval Academy, worked for 10 years in Air Force R&D program management, and then completed a master's degree in management at MIT before joining the NT Group as a product manager in 1990. Sanjay Parthasarathy, group product manager in the business development group within the Advanced Consumer Technology Division, had an undergraduate background in computer science as well as an MIT master's degree in management. Christine Whitress, in contrast, majored in political science and psychology at the University of Puget Sound, moved from recruiting to product management in the Excel Group, then moved into systems product marketing. Customer support engineers have a wide variety of backgrounds as well. In recruiting people for this specialty, rather than technical degrees, PSS managers look for characteristics such as whether the candidate seems empathetic, likes to solve other people's problems and teach, and has good analytical problem-solving and communication skills. Trish May, a former director of PSS marketing, adds that Microsoft also does some rudimentary psychological profiling and testing, especially of new hires headed toward management positions. Some customer support engineers have programming backgrounds, but their primary job is to assist individuals who range from novice users of MS-DOS and Windows to sophisticated users of highly technical products like language compilers or network communication systems. Mark Seidenberg, for example, had a degree in digital electronics and worked in computer hardware repair before joining Microsoft in 1984. He headed a group that supported Excel for the Macintosh and then moved into Windows support before taking on the position as product development consultant to the Excel Group based in PSS. Principle: educate new hires through learning by doing and mentoring. The problem of how to educate and guide new people that join Microsoft, particularly in such hard-to-define functions as program management, has grown along with the diversity and sophistication of the company's products. In the early days, people communicated knowledge about product designs by word of mouth or by reading code and trying products themselves. New people watched more experienced people, and everyone learned through trial and error. For the most part, Microsoft continues to operate in this way. Rather than investing heavily in training programs, formal rules and procedures, or even detailed product documentation, Microsoft tries to hire people who can learn on their own on the job. It then relies on experienced people to educate and guide new people. Team leads, experts in certain areas, and formally appointed mentors take on the burden of teaching in addition to doing their own work. This approach has its pluses and minuses. The pluses are that people feel empowered to learn and make decisions on their own, and their roles in the company are flexible and can become as broad as they can handle. But there are several negatives. It is difficult for new people to learn about Microsoft's complex products and sometimes vague job responsibilities. New people often interrupt the work of experienced people to ask questions. With Microsoft's rapid growth and shortages of experienced middle managers and team leads, new people often have to learn by trial and error or from mentors with no more than a couple years of experience. And mistakes can be costly in terms of money and industry reputation in the world of mass market software. Program managers. Microsoft has found it difficult not only to hire, but also to train people to become program managers. Mike Conte described his experience of finding out what a program manager does as partly learning it and partly inventing it. This was especially true in the early years of the company. Even 10 years after Jay Blumenthal acted as the first program manager, though, Microsoft has yet to establish detailed guidelines for the job. Conte admitted this. In general at Microsoft, and program management in particular at Microsoft, there isn't a very official orientation path. There isn't a very official training program. There isn't anything that necessarily says, as a guideline, all program managers have to write specs this way, or have to do prototypes this way, or even have to do their scheduling this way. Program managers can now receive formal orientation, including an optional 3-week training program. In addition, Microsoft holds occasional Blue Tray lunches, where program managers give talks on their experiences. John Fine, for example, once talked about what makes a good specification, and this discussion was circulated on videotape. Overall, however, Microsoft managers believe that learning by doing, mentoring, and choosing the right people to begin with are far better ways to create program managers than trying to educate them in a classroom. Fine, speaking when he was the director of program management, emphasized this point. So, assume you hire the right kind of person. Then, so far, I have seen 90% of the training process that is effective be from mentoring, meaning a new program manager has to work for a more experienced program manager who himself is a great, successful program manager. And the efforts that have gone over the years at training via other mechanisms account for the other 10%. Similar to developers and testers, Fine noted that program managers also learn by moving from relatively simple to more complex tasks. When you first come in, you're given one feature area that hopefully can be stated in one sentence, or else the goal of what you're supposed to get done is not clear enough for you as a beginner. One feature area to be responsible for. That means make sure when the product ships that your feature area is okay in all dimensions. It didn't cause the product to slip. It has the appropriate level of stability and functionality. You typically do that for a while, 6 months, a year, whatever, with pretty close monitoring. Then, after a proven success there, typically the same kind of work will occur, maybe for a bigger feature set, but with less close management. After some time goes by, the next step is you get to the point where you can own a small project or a major component of a large project. If you're on a very small project, you might end up being the only program manager on it. I think that is the kind of fifth gear for program managers. That's a career right there. What I call ninja program management. This is, no matter how hard a project that gets dumped on you, from the first glimmer to out the door, to make it happen. There are a couple of directions from there, of course. Like any other company, you can aspire to management. And a different track is you can start thinking more and more about more cross-product strategic issues. When you get that far, just like in any other company, your functional area almost becomes meaningless, and you do what needs to be done at the company. Developers. The experience level, as well as the need for specific training and orientation for new developers, varies by group, product, and feature assignment. In areas such as Excel and Word, or even Windows and MS-DOS, most developers have only 2 or 3 years of experience. In Windows NT, however, the core designers have a dozen years or more of experience in operating system development with major organizations such as DEC. Most other NT developers have 4 years of experience, some coming from outside Microsoft and some from within, such as from OS2 or languages. In all groups, it has been difficult to bring in new developers because Microsoft's main products are now so large and complicated in terms of the number of their components and potential interactions. Ed Fries, development manager for Word, majored in computer science at the New Mexico Institute of Mining and Technology and worked in Excel before moving to Word in 1992. He explained his approach to dealing with newcomers. New people are a challenge. It's very hard. They're coming in the middle of a huge, complicated program. Fortunately, they don't need to know everything about the program to start and do some work. But they learn some painful lessons. They learn they have to worry about things that weren't obvious. Like they think they're just going to put in a little feature somewhere, but they have to understand there is a macro language, and that macro language affects how they do their feature. If they don't do it right, they'll break the macro language, or any other mode in the product. Their feature might work in one mode, but not in another, or it might work, but not in print preview, or it won't print. There are so many different interacting things. Perhaps because developers are writing code that leaves little leeway on a computer, it either works well or does not. Microsoft has a longer history of formal orientation and training for this specialty. Microsoft offers several multiple-day workshops for new developers that deal with the development process, products, tools, and other topics. Still, Microsoft people continue to debate the usefulness of these courses, and managers have not made them mandatory. Dave Moore, in particular, stated that he prefers to have new people jump right into work without even watching some dumb video for a half hour about how Microsoft got started. They probably know that stuff already. And that's a morale killer. The first moment that they're here on campus has to be an exciting moment that will carry forward for their whole career. So projects are anxious to get those guys on the team right now, their first day. During their first few days, new hires meet with managers or other senior people from the various specialties. They receive a brief introduction to the development cycle at orientation, but learn the details of the development process as they work on a project. Development managers assign the new hires immediately to an individual task or to work with a feature team. They may also introduce the new people to more senior developers willing to serve as mentors, which in many groups is a formal assignment for 1 to 9 months. The mentor is the person that really does the lifelong training, Moore observed. New hires also start coding relatively easy features that take 1 week or so and have few interactions with other features. Senior people, the feature team lead, an area expert, or a person's mentor, then review the new people's code fairly carefully. In some groups, new developers receive a document describing the internal structure of the product. For example, Word, Excel, and Windows NT have primers referred to respectively as Word Internals, Excel Internals, and Newcomer.doc. These quickly become outdated and are not as detailed as newcomers would like, nor is it possible to explain all the intricacies of how computer code works in large systems through a written document. Hence, new people still have to rely on mentors, as well as learn about products by reading code and doing actual coding and debugging themselves. John Devon, formerly with Excel and now development manager for Office, joined Microsoft in 1984 after studying mathematics and computer science at Oregon State University. He described the Excel Internals document and Microsoft's oral tradition. Excel Internals explains the philosophy of a few of the basic things in Excel, like the cell table formulas, memory allocation, a little bit about the layer, a special interface with the operating system that allows Microsoft to use the same Excel core on both Windows and Macintosh platforms. See Chapter 5. It's very sparse. We don't necessarily rely on that for people to learn things. I'd say we have a strong oral tradition. And the idea is that the mentor teaches people, or people learn it themselves by reading code. Over the course of a project, it goes from mostly truthful to less truthful, and then we have to fix it up. We don't fix it up as we go along on a project. We will give it some attention between projects. Devon emphasized that the document, while not perfect, is still very useful, because Excel is now a million lines of difficult code that is very stressful for new people to learn. This problem of learning the system on your own has become especially critical and painful, since about half of the developers who work on Excel have been in Microsoft less than 2 or 3 years, and there is only one technical lead for the entire project. And maintaining the document is another time-consuming activity that Devon and other people in Microsoft dislike and tend to put off. As a result, they keep the document short and update it only in between versions of the product. We're having some stress on this right now in the group. It, Excel, is hard to learn. You come in and a million-plus lines of code. How do you get your feet on the ground? We always think that the way to make that easier is to have more things written down. But now, you don't only maintain your source code, but you maintain all the things that you have written down. And, as I said, the mentor relationship has worked very well for us in the past. That may be kind of broken on Excel 5.0. Maybe we really do need to write more stuff down. But the flip side is, all the new people are getting work done, even though there's a fairly high level of frustration for them. The Excel group has played a special role within Microsoft as the technical leader in software process and feature standardization, and as a de facto training ground for talented developers and managers. Like John Fine in program management, Devon felt that new people learn best by doing. What we like to do is just give people assignments, or people take assignments, depending upon their seniority level, and rely on people being smart enough to figure it out. A lot of people get hung up in, well, we can't have that person work on this. They don't have any experience. And here, I think we say, well, you don't have any experience, but we think you can learn it. Devon recalled for us his first job in Microsoft when someone asked him to write the copy protection software for Mac Excel 1.0. This experience forced him to learn, at a very deep technical level, how Macintosh disk drives work in terms of both hardware and software. Devon also realized that allowing people to learn on their own results in occasional mistakes, and that good managers must expect this. People have license to make mistakes at first. You can learn a lot by doing it and seeing how it's wrong and fixing it up. That's also one of the key ways how I learned how stuff worked. When someone's working even on a new assignment, and maybe someone else was the expert in that area, before they check in code, they'll have the best expert review their code and tell them, this was done right, or this is a better way to do this. The idea is that everyone is going to learn by doing, and mentors will answer questions. But then, when they think they're done with the code, they'll get a code review to get tips.